Welcome to What the Hex, your source for Warhammer Underworlds in under 30 hot tips that they don't want you to know. With you as always, I'm Davey, and I have my co-host, Phil. How are you doing, Phil?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah. We have a special guest this week. Sometimes he's wrong, but he wants to prove that he is right. We have Max Bernstein. How are you doing, Max?
Well done. I'm doing good. Yeah, no, I was just kind of piecing together the joke you just made. That's
hard. I like that. So, Max, we're going to talk to him a little bit more in a sec. We're going to get some housekeeping out of the way real quick. You can get us at WTHcast if you want to reach out to the show for any reason. We are recording this. Still, the most recent thing to have occurred was Rippa Snarlfangs and the gift set have dropped. And we don't yet have a date for an incoming set of new warbands or a single warband, depending on how they are doing it going forward. We are going to, let's see, we'll go with, cause we got Max on here. I think most people, I may be projecting here since I listen to all the podcasts and read all the blogs and try to absorb as much content. I'm going to, perhaps wrongly assume, but I think it'd be correct to say that everyone who's listened to this is already well aware of you, Max, and your podcast, Battle for Salvation Warhammer Underworlds podcast. Tell us a little bit about that. You've been going for, I think actually technically longer than us, although there were some, there's the fabled lost episodes of yours where I think you guys started out on, Twitch. Is that correct?
And we started out on Twitch because we just didn't have a platform at the time. And we were just trying to like kind of proof of concepting the whole thing. And so we ended up doing, there were like three episodes, I think, that we don't have, any recordings of locked away somewhere. I'm fairly certain we did, like, it was like Night Vault when like Night Vault came out is when we started to do it. So I think there was like a Night Vault, what are we looking forward to one? And then there was like a Cursebreaker breakdown. And then there was like a Thorns breakdown. And then when we moved on to recording and putting them up on, we started on Podbean and then later iTunes. So you can go on those two and check them out. Randall's actually trying to figure out how to put on a couple things right now. The first one we did was Goblins.
Yeah. Okay. That's the first one that stayed in perpetuity.
Yeah. Or was it Eyes of the Night? I have to look back. But it was like it was kind of like maybe a month or two into Night Vault when we started putting them up.
Cool.
We just saw that there was like a void because Claim the City had said that they didn't. I remember listening to Claim the City. And they were like, oh, yeah, I don't know if we're going to like do Underworlds only anymore. And we're like, oh, so there is no Underworlds podcast. Let's jump into that void. And then we did. And then you guys came along. That was great because at first we're like, oh, no. But then we're like, nah, you know what? It's good that there is some diversity out there because it's important to have a lot of different voices. You know, because people are going to look at things different ways and they're going to look in ways that, you know, like maybe we don't. And so it's really important to have a lot of diversity out there.
Yeah, I agree. And you guys do a good job with the sort of faction deep dives. You know, all the different podcasts kind of have their different areas that they lean a little harder into. But even if there's overlap, it's been fun to get the different takes. So cool. You guys are up in New York, correct?
We're in New York, Connecticut area.
We're actually in this segment, What the Hex is going on with you? So what are you up to lately in the Underworlds hobby? That'd be whether it's with your podcast or on the tabletop or...
Oh, yeah. So let's see. I can talk mostly about tabletop. We have to do... a goblin sitting on wolves episode, but I was the one who had to play test the Wild Hunt, the Despoilers, and the Grimwatch. So I think Randall's going to take the Snarlfangs. He seems to be interested in them. I know that he's painting them right now. So I guess I'll see on Monday when we go to the club together how those are working for him. I have been playing Banshees a lot lately and painting them. Trying as hard as I can to do that. I brought them to a tournament recently that had a lot of talent at it, actually, because it was me, it was Randall, it was Chris Spark, and
Gerard the Professor,
who lives up in Connecticut, too. So we played him, and again, I played Gerard in the second round, and he beat me with a mirror match, which I did not plan for. Nope. I was like, well, I'll probably play a lot of Grimwatch, and I'll probably play, you know, like a lot of, you know, maybe Rippas are going to be there. No, Rippas there. There was Grimwatch there. Chris Park was playing that. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to like, because I had like a game plan, and I'm like, all right, so I'm going to have to score really quickly. So I have a lot of these like things that are like easy to score. And then Jared just walks up, has the same thing. And my dice just go super cold.
Oh.
And yeah, and so he got me there. So again, I lose to Gerard the Professor in the second round. Of course, this time he didn't break the rules to do it. He actually just let my dice go cold. That was it. Yeah.
Cool. Well, and then if I remember right, Randall took that one down.
Randall took that one. He's got a nasty Thorns deck that is so good.
Yeah,
and he beat Gerard in the next round for the final table.
I think I got to play against a version of that deck. I played him the night before, a little practice. Mm-hmm. I think I took Rippas, and it was one of those weird Rippas games where, you know, throw seven dice at a spear attack, miss, take the bite attack and hit an inspired supported chain rasp and kill it. You're like, what is even happening right now?
Oh, because he would inspire. If you're standing, if you walked up next to him, right?
No, I think you're saying, no, because it would be he inspires at the start of his activation.
Start of his activation.
Yeah. Okay. No, I was doing one of these things where you charge next to one, try to spear a different one, tried to spear.
Oh, I see.
I threw seven dice. I really needed to kill just one more, so I threw seven dice with a great strength stab it attack at a uninspired chain rasp. Missed it. I was like, well, I guess I'll just bite this other one and see what happens. And this one's inspired and I kill it. So I'm like, all right, I guess it works one way or the other. So, but if you guys are doing a deep dive on that, I'm looking forward to hearing more about that. We've given our kind of first impression on it. Somebody sure. out there a deep dive. So, sure. Phil, what have you been up to?
I've been busy with non-hobby things. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately I haven't really played any in a while, but I did finish version 1.0 of that weird Eyes of the Nine deck, so I'm looking forward to trying that out and seeing how that goes. My goal at this point, at the very least, is for it to be a major headache for anybody who plays against it, even if it doesn't win.
You're going to try to repeat the get somebody to not want to play game three? All right. I keep thinking that there's something to Guardians, so I keep messing around with them. I am trying to do that thing where Galleon takes a bigger role. Although
yeah.
I think this last time I got his warding stance on him, but he never was attacked once. They just kind of, but what it has been interesting is to try and build around Eltharri not being quite as pivotal. So, you know, there's maybe just one or two cards in the deck that need her to be alive because people tend to try and drop her pretty quick for good reason. She has access to some great abilities, but if you
actually,
can get her,
go that's ahead. What I did at Nova. There was one of my later rounds was against Eltharri, and I had Molog, so I just sniped her in both games, and it was like easy. Yeah.
Well, so the idea is that everyone knows that everyone's trying to do that, so I'm just going to make her more of a utility piece rather than a centerpiece and see what I can get done there.
Are you considering any objective destruction?
Oh yeah. So that's basically the two cards that that she needs to be in there for are unmaking and invert terrain. I don't have leech in there, but just those two. And even the invert terrain, I was considering leaving out for unexpected peril since you can flip that, but it was just a little wonky. So, but again, just a few games in checking it out. And then I also put in, she's got that Cage of Thorns spell that if she successfully attacks, gives a move token, which I've never seen anyone use. Oh my God. So it seems so good.
Yeah.
So that's in there just because I've wanted to use it for such a long time. And of course I've not yet drawn it in any of the games I've practiced. It's been bottom decked every time. So
bag of tricks.
Yeah. Sure. Could do. But that's that. For community shout outs, I had one. There's Andrea Pomelli. I believe I'm saying that right. He went to an Italian event, and he brought this crazy control Iron Skulls deck. You can check that out over on Well of Power. It's got a little bit of a write up there, and it is all about Iron Skulls holding objectives. So it is totally nuts, and it looks so crazy that it might just work. So it's got like Supremacy and Temporary Victory and that sort of thing.
They're all tanky.
Yeah, they're all tanky, and what he's done a good job of realizing is that if he can capitalize on that tankiness, and then also some of these pushes that they use. So it's either Brutal but Cunning or Cunning but Brutal, where you get a push of three after an attack. He's found a way to leverage some of the cool extra attacks that or extra shifting around and movement that they have. I mean, that card in itself is kind of handy. So. And then the converse, where you react after a move and make an attack, that pairs nicely with Jealous Defense, because you can move on to an objective
and
get a couple of attacks. So some pretty clever selections there.
Were they using any sort of like upgrade weapons for Asha and Haka, because they don't hit very hard?
No, and I'm guessing that's because there's not very much in the objective deck that hinges on actually killing things. So I think there's probably Path to Victory. Yeah, there's Path to Victory in there. But other than that, I think they can score just about everything without doing any kills.
Maybe those two guys were really just for standing on things, and then he was just hitting things with Gurzag.
Yeah, only two restricted cards in the deck as well. Anyway, if you want to read more about it, you can go... you can go check out Well of Power. He's got the deck up there, and he's got a full write-up. It's one of those things that Well of Power has been great for. So I encourage people to go check that out and hang around a while and take a look at what else is there. You guys got any other community shout-outs?
Shout out to all the places in the New York State tri-state area that are putting on Underworld stuff. Let's see, Tabletop Shop up in Newington. We just had a surprise tournament, which is the one, the Randall one, and it was very well attended. We also have this guy, Brandon, up there, who's running an Apex tournament today. And if it was a lot closer to me, I'd probably go to that as well. Mm-hmm. And let's see, just like, hey, Randall, what's going on, man? paint those rippers up. I want to see how you do that. I want to play against somebody who's not Davey. Playing those guys so that I have a chance to win. And by the way, Davey, confirm, I've literally beaten you once in 20 games.
It's something like that. I don't know what the exact count is, but
it is once.
And it was the Molog that went on to be undefeated at ATC. So,
and the only reason why I won that one is because you forgot about that rule temporarily.
Yeah, it was. I knew that you couldn't charge and end at the same hex, and I didn't remember that it actually applied to any move, could not end in the same hex it started at. So I tried walking in a circle and walking back onto the objective I was already standing on, which bricked out an entire round of scoring. So
David,
that's why you play the practice game, so you you make those mistakes there and not when it super duper counts.
Right. So Davey, just tell me in like one sentence or two, why can't I beat you?
Hex.
What? Just a dirty cheater.
That's what I thought. I mean, and you know, whenever we play on Vassal, like my dice die.
They get pretty gross sometimes. Yeah,
they get pretty gross. But still, I mean, it's like I figure out over that many games, I should have gotten you like at least a couple more times out of maybe 15 games.
We should probably be right about 50-50, I would say. But I don't know. There always ends up being some weird thing. I think I was using Farstriders, and
you beat me. With
you were real close to there. Yeah. I was like, man, the only way I can do this is if I like somehow get around to him, kill him, and that'll score me denial. And like this huge Rube Goldberg machine all came together in the last round.
I feel like I'm going to lose. I'm going to lose this podcast simply because you're on it.
Well, here's what I think is going to happen. At some point, we're going to actually play at an event, and all that's going to come back around, and the backlash is going to be ridiculous, and I'm going to get 2-0'd right off the board.
No, I wouldn't do you like that. And also, I don't think that's true. I think you are just actually a better player than me. I also like, and one of these are one of the tips I'm going to talk about. We're going to talk about like, you know, like reading people. Like I feel like I'm a better player in person than I am on like Vassal or TTS.
Sure.
I can't see what you're doing. And I personally get a lot of information off of that. Randall's like very emotive when he plays, so it's like I can tell when I'm beating him.
Well, it's funny because almost every picture I've ever seen of Randall from your events is him like glumly looking down at his glory pile or something.
Right. So. He smiles if he wins. That's true.
Talking about tips, let's get into that. So we're talking about you have a segment called Keys to Salvation, and that is you kind of pitched that as an idea. I thought it sounded great. So we're going to be talking Keys to Salvation. But before we get into all that, let's why don't you tell us what do we mean by a key to salvation? Tell us where that comes from and what does it exactly mean?
So I did actually crib the idea from a different podcast, and I want to just give them a shout out because I used to play X-Wing quite a bit, and there is a really great podcast if you play X-Wing as well called the Birmingham Barons. They're from Birmingham, Alabama, and they do like a very similar segment. But I thought that was something that was lacking in the Underworlds community, so I wanted to bring it to us as well. Because with any tabletop game, the game is not just what's in the rule book, right? So there's a lot more to the community and to the game itself, playing the game, that goes beyond just, you know, like what's on page 19 of the rule book. So I wanted to make sure that there was a conversation for that as well. And so that's where I came up with it. But basically, a key to salvation is just anything about the game that's not necessarily, you know, something that you do within the flow of game, but it could be. So it's just like ways to approach the game, and they don't have to necessarily be gameplay. Mm-hmm. So we've done painting tips. We've done, we've talked about, I'll talk about this a second, talking about how to construct a deck so that it doesn't brick. Stuff like that is just stuff to make you more successful. And of course, we're usually thinking about it from like a tournament play standpoint, but it doesn't necessarily have to be.
Fair. All right. Well, since it is your brainchild, why don't we start it off? Why don't you throw some keys at us?
Sure. I think one of the most important things you can do to be better is to, and I don't want to toot my own horn, but okay. So, what's that? Yeah. Listen to podcasts and read the blogs, I think is a really important thing to do because it's research. And, the more you research, the more information, you know, and the more information, you know, knowledge is half the battle. So I think that's like, you know, putting a little bit of, you know, time and effort into looking up things and kind of getting closer to the community that way, I think is a really great idea. The only caveat to that is that when you read those blogs, you're absolutely hearing them, that information from people who are, and again, tooting my own horn, but also your horn and everybody else's horn, is that you're hearing this information from somebody who is kind of like, I'm using the word expert very loosely, but they're like expert tournament players. And I think in some cases that's definitely warranted because, you know, you have John Reese, you have Carlin, you have the two guys from, Path to Glory. Everybody that is putting the stuff up has been successful players. So they're giving you that information from like a top tier tournament player perspective. So for people who are just starting out with the game or, anybody who's like kind of novice, they do have stuff out there for, people who are of that, you know, skill level, but understand that like everything that everybody's saying is like from this like top tier. Like for me, when we do our podcast, it is definitely geared towards like tournament play. We're not really talking about just like casual games. So understand that when you do that research, when you listen to these podcasts, like make sure that you understand like the lens that they're looking through before you start taking information, because we're all going to say like a card is crap if we think it's crap. And then somebody goes like, or like a warband is crap. There's a great example. And then somebody goes to like an Italian Grand Clash and like literally wins with Iron Skulls, which is to me, that's like my jank deck. Like I bring Iron Skulls to like play against like new people. And this person's out there. So there's a little bit of wiggle there. But definitely do your research because it's really important.
Fair.
And Davey, yeah. I have a suggested listening for all of these.
Okay.
Here's my suggested listening, and if you listen to the lyrics, you'll understand why this makes sense. But for this one, I have Pine Grove, and they have this new record coming out early next year, but there's a song on it called Moment, and if you listen to that, you'll understand why I chose it.
Okay.
All right. So that's the first one.
All right. Give us another.
Cool. All right. Here's something that I've done, and I'm sure everybody's done this, and it has definitely bit us all in the butt, and I think that we should all be very careful. Every time you go to a tournament, no matter who's in front of you, no matter how they set up or what they're doing, treat them like they can beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And watch out.
Can I give you a reverse? No matter who you sit down against, treat the game like you can beat them. Mm-hmm. So don't defeat yourself just because you sat down and Mike Carlin's across the table from you, right?
Mark, just because sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Sometimes. Everybody makes mistakes. You know, you can. Aman Khusro doesn't have 100% win rate. Just because you draw him in the first round doesn't mean that your tournament is done. Play that game. Yeah. Make them play the game. Make them play mistake free and see what you can do. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yep. Rob Mead sat down in front of Aman first round in Adepticon last year. Had to play him, and then he won out after that. So don't ever stop. But again, like, make sure that anybody who's across the table from you, don't underestimate them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never know. I've had games where I saw this person, you know, across from me, I could tell that they were just like starting out. Mm-hmm. But then the game gets a lot closer than I thought it was because they're playing, you know, whatever they're playing and I'm playing whatever I'm playing. And it's just the way that the game flows. So it's, don't rest on your laurels because you're just going to get rocked by somebody by accident. And also if you ever sit across, from me, at a tournament, just change your name to Davey Calkins and you will win.
We have actually yet to test that.
We've never done that. There's a very low chance I'm going to get to Adepticon this year. Really low.
All right.
I don't even know if I'm going to get in Nova's like really late this year.
I saw that.
Yeah. So if it's like during the school year, I don't know if I can go.
Problems abound.
That's right. Really
well, so, and my other thing about this, if you're playing against someone who is a newer player, often the key is like you'll see a card go down and you're like, ah, that's like a card I'd consider suboptimal. Sometimes that should actually scare you because it means you can't predict what's in that deck. So all of a sudden you get, you know, denial, protect the Laird for 5 glory in the final round and lose. So I agree. Treat every game like a challenge and you could lose. So
I definitely lost on Vassal to a guy playing Eyes of the Nine. And I was like, oh, Eyes of the Nine? This guy doesn't know what he's doing. Housed me.
Was it Adam F?
See that? See that, Phil? You got an in, man.
All right.
Hold on. I got recommended listening, The National, Murder Me, Rachel.
Nice.
Okay. All right.
Give me another one.
Okay, so this was one that was on the show recently, but I think this is really important right now, and I want to make sure that I say it again. We have that you have to – the way that the meta is now with Grimwatch and Banshees are like this too. And Thorns. There are a lot of really high S-tier warbands with decks that now will score tons of glory no matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So it is important that you build a deck, no matter what you're doing. The objective deck cannot brick.
Mm-hmm.
Because the second you throw away, you mulligan your first 3 cards, your total glory pool is now like 4 or 5 glory less than it's supposed to be. And if you do that, your opponent's going to outscore you.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to consider making an objective deck that cannot brick no matter what you draw.
Definitely. And I think another point to go along with this, beyond just not bricking, but like if you just have lots of really easy to score but low glory things, you may also just lose that leg race. Like even if you score your whole deck, you might not have enough.
Yeah.
Right. So we're in sort of a weird spot right now. The thorns are so hot right now and can score so much glory that you've got to have some very interesting answers in your deck. And yes, if you have to discard anything, you're probably playing a extremely uphill battle.
Yeah, when this came up, was it Carlin was on and he kind of pitched this? Yeah, that was one of those like, you know, nod along in my, I was probably running, whatever, but I was like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And I realized I'd been kind of thinking about this, but in a little bit of a backwards way, which was that I hadn't, you know, obviously I'm trying to make decks that don't brick, but and some part of my head knew that it's so dangerous to mulligan that opening objective hand that I almost never do it, even if I think I probably should. I still don't. I'm like, I better just try and find a way to do it with this. And that's why, although I hadn't put words to it necessarily. So I thought that was a really excellent point. And I'm glad you brought it back to here.
Yeah. That happened to me against Gerard the Professor in our first of the two games. The second game is all dice. Like I should have definitely won that game, but like I threw like 13 dice and none of them hit. So that was a problem. But in the first game, I drew up like fired up something else in combo strike. Oh, fired up Domain of Death, which is like, that's like the one third, third end phase. And it's like, that's like my big like money thing. And then combo strike. And I'm like, I have to play this because I'm playing against a top tier opponent who's knows how to build his deck and he's not mulliganing. So my only chance is to play this. Cause if I throw these away, he's going to outscore me in the end.
Now, do you play it and you cycle one of those, right? Like
I ended up cycling a combo strike at the end. Yeah.
Sure.
I think I was able to score fired up and that was it.
Okay.
But I was like,
my take on that is sometimes if you can't afford to lose all of them, you plan on losing one of them. So maybe if you, can one of your opening activations is this cycle, you know, cycle combo strike, hopefully draw into an immediate, which can then score another immediate or something like that.
I'm considering throwing that card out of, even though it's so good with that deck, because against anybody else, you know, like I'll end up just scoring all my surges and I definitely, all the things in the Banshee deck are like really easy to score. All the surges are like, you just like move through a block text and land next to something. You know, it's like they're all super easy and they're all totally on you, the pilot. So I love having Domain of Death, or Dominion of Death. What is it called? Dominion of Death. So I love using that one. But again, if it pops up in your opening hand, it's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's going to happen one out of four games.
Yeah. And
several times during a tournament.
Right. Sure. What's your recommended listening for that one?
Oh, so you said who's the guy's, what's the guy's name again? The song.
Oh, Ben Folds, Brick.
Ben Folds 5. There's only three guys in that band. I don't get it. And I said Brick House by Chic.
What else you got?
Oh, I got some stuff.
All right.
I was thinking about this stuff. I've said this one before, and I think that you should play everything.
Mm-hmm.
But make a deck for every warband there is at some point during your career. Put them on the table and play one best of three at least. I think the only warbands I have never put on the table in my career are Sepulchral Guard, maybe Reavers. I played Reavers once like a long time ago.
Yeah. No, well, Reavers.
Denied. The reason why I never played Reavers is because I started with Magor and they were better at that.
I see.
At the time. And then there's just so much other stuff now I don't think has ever came up. And you know what I've never put on the table, even though I've completely painted them up and Randall keeps telling me is that I would love them, is the Gun Dwarfs.
Oh, yeah.
I never put them on the table. I have like maybe 30 cards picked out for a deck. I'm not like finished yet, but like I'm kind of working on that and I painted them. I think they're the best paint job I've done so far and I should totally play them, but I just haven't done that. But everything else I've played at least once, except for Rippas, but they just came out.
Well, to your point of that being a good thing to do is try out each warband. I think nothing helps identify a weakness of a warband like playing with them. Because all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is a thing that I don't want to happen. And then you can convert that into like, okay, well then when I'm playing against them, this is a thing I'm going to try to make happen. Yeah. And sometimes it's a handful of things, sometimes just the one.
Yeah, even if you if you're never planning on playing them, like I've put Eyes of the Nine on the table. I've put, you know, I brought Orcs, the Iron Skulls, to a tournament recently. Almost won too. You know, that was a 2-1 round. So yeah, I think it's important to do that because then when your opponent sits down and they have their thing, you're going to be like, oh, like I played a lot of Guardians at the end of the Night Vault season because that was
I've got a little. A lot of games against you with them, I think. So,
and that's why, yeah, and that's why I knew, like, oh, if I just kill Yulfari, he's done.
Sure.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What musical recommendation do you have?
Smashing Pumpkins, Try.
Nice.
That's a good one.
All right. Let's see. What do we got next?
Next, this is just an etiquette thing. So sorry, Phil, if I kind of step on you a little bit here, but play everything above the table. This is like a thing that people do usually by accident where they will like they want to rest. So they put their hands like down, but that puts the cards under the table. And sometimes I see people like shuffling down there and I don't think we have like cheaters like in our meta. I've never seen anybody be like so like, you know, where winning was just like so important that they had to like, you know, slide a little, you know, ace of spades in there somewhere, you know. So I don't think that's the thing, but it kind of sets a bad precedent. So just make sure that everything stays up above the table. Make sure that like when you're putting upgrades on things that they're visible, you know. Just don't do things that are like, you know, hiding, you know, information that's supposed to be, you know, public. So just make sure that stuff is all above board.
Sure.
And it's usually accidental. I mean, I think most people just like,
yeah, definitely
just tired and they just want to shuffle and it's just under the table. Just try to keep everything up.
Well, and then, this actually brings up, I meant to actually give this as a community shout out. John Winrees had a guest spot from, I think, Tom Conboy. Thomas Conboy had an article on his blog that was it was titled something like how to beat a cheater, which I thought was kind of an unfortunate title. One of the fellows from the Battle Mallet podcast said he really liked it, but he read it as if it was here's a guide on things to do as good etiquette, and one of that was in there like keep your cards above the table, you know, cut a deck, you know, all these sort of things that, hey, by me offering to do these things or making sure I do these things, it makes sure to avoid any perception of misplay or you know, cheating or anything like that. And I thought there's a really, really good and maybe a more positive way to read that. Cause I agree. I don't think we have any real problem with cheating in this community. But that those are nice ways of playing etiquette.
Right. So it's just come into the thing with like, you know, open heart, clear eyes, can't lose.
Sure.
And it's the same thing with cutting the deck. Like you always just offer. I think when you're playing casual, like nobody really cares. But when you're playing in a tournament, like where there's, you know, there's glass on the line, just put your, I always say like, I'm presenting my decks to you if you'd like to cut them. And that usually is enough to get your opponent to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. What else? I like your recommendation thing here. Yeah.
I don't think there's anything else we can do for this except for Busta Rhymes, put your hands where my eyes can see.
Yeah. Nice.
It's a little too on the nose.
Okay. I was just hearing some Busta Rhymes the other day and I was like, man, that guy's voice is so wild and enjoyable.
He's from Long Island, man. He's from where I'm from. Well, he's a little bit further out, but yeah. Moving on. Phil, I think that you mentioned this a little bit later, so I'm going to just say it real quick. And that is, when Matt Martin was on our show, we always ask, you know, like for when we're doing deep dives of people who have used it, he was talking about like the boards that he loves to use. And I think that is something that you have to consider before you go to a tournament. John Reese does this. Carlin does this. have an idea of what board you want to use or a couple of boards you want to use as boards where you win the roll. And of course, boards when you don't win the roll. Mm-hmm. Or rather, sorry, rather yep. when you have the objectives or when you have to set the boards up for sure. your warband. Like, what do you want to do in this case? And then, like, think of what boards and, like, what kind of layout you want to do. Like, have that kind of figured out ahead of time. It's not really a great idea to – it's not a good feeling, like, when you're playing a tournament and you're like – all right, I'm going to put this board here, and then you realize on deployment that you screwed up.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's a terrible feeling.
Sometimes it doesn't necessarily feel like I just lost on setup, but it feels like I just made this game, like, instead of a 50-50, it feels like a 20-80.
Yeah, it's like a 60-40. Like, yeah. It's not a good feeling. So
For me specifically, it's the having played some aggro warbands lately, it's the what board can I put down if I expect to get diagonaled, right? Like,
yeah,
that's mm-hmm. a big one. And then even more specifically, what board can I put down when it's going to be a diagonal with the Molten Shard Pit, the one that Randall hates so much, because of where that lava
that's
pit
my
is
fault,
associated.
By the way. Well, I did that to him. Like, he didn't say that because he like put the post up. I did that to him. He was playing Thundrix. I was playing. What was I playing? I think I might have been playing Banshees, and he put down the Molten Shard Pit. No, I put down the Molten Shard Pit, and he put something down where Thundrick was really close to me, and I like called to the grave him into the hex.
Yeah.
And then I moved one of my guys very, very slightly, and he thought that I was up to something, so he like sidestepped out of it. And then I distractioned him back into it, and I charged him, killed him, and the game was over in like activation one. So I would like to apologize to the community for that post, because that was definitely my fault.
Well, with Molten Shard Pit specifically, if they're going to put that diagonal there, there's specifically two corners that they're going to attach to, right? So if you look at your board and you think that you're going to Molten Shard Pit diagonal you, you can look at the board and have the board that has two corners that are beneficial for attaching there. Cause there's two corners that it can't attach to and still do that. So that's if you really want a deep dive and you're really worried about that board. But I find that to be the hardest one is knowing what board you're going to reach for when you expect to get diagonaled, in general. My Molten Shard Pit horror story is, I was one of these Guardians builds. Actually, this was it might have been our bud Jeff Osborne had a deck, and he had Springseed Step in there. So this is the after you make a move with a friendly fighter, you can react and push another friendly fighter up to three hexes so that they're adjacent to that fighter who just moved.
All right.
So I'd gotten long boarded against Eyes, and I was like, well, this way I'll push up. I was going to get Galleon leading and then Onslaying kind of right behind him, picking off anyone who was standing too close to lethals and I think I was getting ready to throw a Larval Lance on her. It was all good. So I pushed her three X's up. Only Galleon was standing next to the shard pit, the lava pit, and I got mirror moved off that three hex push. So Galleon got thrown and dragged through three lava hexes off of the mirror move.
Because it doesn't have to be in the same direction, right?
No, it's so just push,
one, two, and then push you into the third.
I imagine this big, like, Zinchian spectral hand picking up and just swirling him around in the lava pit. So then I'm all of a sudden up with Galleon standing in lava way up front with one health left. Man.
The floor is literally lava.
Yeah. Now, the one thing is this is actually a scenario where somebody might be actually willing to attack him. Like, I could actually kill him. So he actually ended up surviving, but I spent the whole game waiting for a distraction to drop and just finish him off because I was struggling to get him out of danger. Anyway, yes, Shard Pit, plan for it. But yeah, the diagonals. But the other side of it, like you were saying, is have a board if you didn't win objectives. And I think Carlin was talking about this where, you know, he narrowed it down. He knew that he wanted to place his lethals aggressively, which means that in order to score calculated risk, it meant he needed to have a lethal in his territory that didn't count on him putting a token down. I thought that was pretty clever. So
yes,
you can save yourself time, and saving yourself time gives you a few more room for thought cycles on the other end for making decisions towards the end of the game. So,
Baroness board up the house.
Strong so choice.
Good. Love Baroness. Yeah. All right. Next, this one, we keep talking about Carlin, but he's just like such a fountain of knowledge. But one of the most important ones that he ever said, which was the one we did the first time he was on the show, was the idea to treat the game like a puzzle, mm-hmm. and not, you know, like, because it kind of takes like the, you know, I don't know, kind of takes the idea that you know the situation's hopeless out of the equation, and you go like, all right, just mm-hmm. when you're like kind of in the third round and you're like, all right, I got 12 glory, my opponent has 14, that's where my guy is, that's where his guy is, mm-hmm. how do I score enough to win this game? Mm-hmm. And then just kind of looking at it and going like, well, I can go there, or I could do this. Oh, wait, I have this card. I can move that there. And that, so like kind of thinking about it from like just not just like, oh, I'm down. Don't think about it emotionally. Ah, yeah. I'm losing. I'm never going to get to that guy. He's all the way over there. Like you're going to lose. You know,
yeah, well,
like, all right, there's a way to do this. What is the way?
To that effect, I see it as a good time to do that is when something unexpected happens. So, you know, like, oh, I put 7 dice into this attack and it didn't land. You can spend a lot of time thinking about how like disappointing that was, or you can say, I need to reassess. And what you don't want to do is just keep solving that same puzzle. The puzzle is not the same anymore. It's changed.
Right.
So just like you said, criteria, here are the boundaries of the problem. Let me go try and solve it.
Exactly. It's kind of like a so what, now what? Mm-hmm. mentality. Like, all right, so that happened, nothing you can do, now what? Mm-hmm. There's the game still going.
Yeah.
And I like to think, you know, even if you have a plan and you know what you're going to do, have the countermeasures ready in case something doesn't work. It's sort of like chess. Yeah. Like, you need to be thinking more than one step ahead. You need to be thinking 3 steps ahead, because if you're banking on whatever you're doing to work and that's the only thing that you have going, then if that happens to fail, either through bad luck or because your opponent had another countermeasure that you weren't expecting and you didn't have anything else going, you're now scrambling to try and figure out what to do. So I like to approach it with a few different options.
Yeah, and to add on to that, I haven't watched a lot of chess, but I don't ever recall seeing like a chess match where somebody gets super triggered because somebody did something. I don't feel like I've ever seen that, because, you know, like if you're confident in what you can do, it's like, even when you have a setback, you can go like, all right, it's okay, I can still figure this out. And I think that's just like the way to think about and approach the game.
There's not like a John McEnroe of chess that you're aware of?
No, I've never seen one. There's a John McEnroe of tennis. He gets mad when he loses. And me. I guess I'm the closest to John McEnroe. I get really mad because the opposite side of this tip is that there is a point where you're going to realize you have to lose.
Sure.
Right? Like sometimes, so for me, it's like when I sit down at my computer and I call Davey and I ask him to play a game, I figure, okay, I'm going to lose this game. That's okay. But with everybody else, there's a certain point where I'm like, I can't catch this person. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm down 7. Yeah. There's 2 activations left. I don't have the cards to score. I will mm-hmm. never catch this person. And that's like another tip, is like when that happens, just realize that and be like, nope, they're going to get me. And I just have to win the next 2 games now. But I'm going to try to bring my glory differential up as high as I can.
Right. You still have a puzzle in front of you. It's glory. Like, if you're in a tournament, glory differential. If it's not a tournament, if it's a casual game, then it's practice. Like, how can I, you know, still have the most efficient activations out of here?
Right.
Well, and Davey, you had an interesting situation like this come up at Adepticon last year, right?
Late on me.
You're playing golf.
Where you're
bothering the entire time.
One of your messages. One of
trying to talk him
remember. One of your opponents was like, he knew he was going to lose, so he made a point to like not play any more cards. Oh, no, this is at ATC. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
At ATC.
This is Josh with his Overlords, with his Thundrix Profiteers.
That's actually
he realized he'd read the matchup wrong. He thought I was aggro Mollig, and once he figured out that I was going to run away with it, and I mean, almost literally run away with it because I was running into a corner to read books.
Run away with it, yeah.
He stopped discarding objectives. He stopped playing cards, and we went through that game real fast. And I went into the game with a lot less knowledge about his deck than he had of mine.
So sort of a tactical retreat situation where you're like, well, I know I'm going to lose, so let's get out of this one and into the next one. Where
Can I jump to my next one? Because actually the next one is this.
Sure.
So just real quick about the treat the game as a puzzle one. Recommended listening is Dashboard Confessional, that's a ruined puzzle. Okay. Next. hold on a second, because I'm just moving stuff around because you were just talking about that. And my next tip was monitor the discard decks because that is public knowledge. You can always ask your opponent, can I see through your discard deck? And they have to let you because it's open. And you can be like, oh, okay, let's see. They've already thrown away Distraction. I don't remember that because I was from the first round. So late in the third round, so they can't distract me off of this objective. They've already used Spectral Wings, so there's no way for them to get that guy all the way over here. And you can use the information of what have they already played. Oh, they've already played Path to Victory, so don't have to worry about, you know, losing a guy and them standing on objectives. And that allows you to make better decisions on how you want to approach the remainder of the game, because you know that some of these things have already been played. Like when Quick Thinker was a deal, I would sometimes try to, and I've said this, I would try to trigger it early in the game so I didn't have to worry about it for the rest of the game.
Yeah. What the card that Jonathan Davis has been talking about with that same effect is Restless Prize. He likes to, he says he plays much more comfortably once he's seen that played from the opponent's side.
Yep.
Because now he doesn't have to operate as if it's out there anymore. So I think he has the same attitude only with Restless Prize now.
Recommended listening.
Oh, yeah.
Madison, Wisconsin's own Rainer Maria. They have a song called Look Now, Look Again, which is what you should definitely do.
All right.
With those discard decks.
Yeah. Well, and then even if it's on the early mulligan, right? Maybe it's giving you, maybe it's in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
And it gives you some insight into what you're playing against, you know?
Exactly.
If I'm playing against Thorns or Goblins and I see a key go down in their discard because they had to mulligan, I'm like, okay, where there's one, there's probably more. So
I love it when my opponents mulligan right away at the beginning of the first game of a tournament round. They might as well just be playing with their hand facing towards me. It's like, okay, that's what you were planning on doing. Great. Now I know not to do this and I know to do that. Yeah.
Sure. Which is part of what leads me to like, not mulligan when I probably should, is because I don't want to give any information. Yeah. But yeah, sometimes you gotta. But speaking of lots of keys, you got a lot. What else we got?
Let's see. I think that if you're one of the big dogs in your meta, this is completely has nothing to do with the game itself. If you are the big dog in your meta and you win a lot, start playing jank. Just play weird stuff because, you know, I already have, not bragging, but I do have 7 glass trophies and my wife is mad. We don't have a lot of shelf space.
Because you don't so have like, more. You want, she says, why aren't there 16?
Right, exactly. Because she's like, you're supposed to be going for the Reese Slam. Let's get on it, sir. No, my wife is not very supportive of my playing. She's like, okay, whatever. You go and play with your little plastic men. But I started realizing that, you know, and this goes back to a conversation I had with Amon a while back, because we were both like the ones in our meta who would win a lot. And we were just talking like, hey, we should just bring jank, like, you know, build the community, make people want to come. Because if we're just going over there and just curb stomping everybody, you know, that's not fun for beginners. So, you know, read the group. Obviously, but I mean, for me, I have that Iron Skulls thing. If I play against somebody who's new at a casual night, that's what I bring. I'm not bringing, you know, like a finely tuned Grimwatch, you know, deck. to casual night with beginners. That's not, it's not fun for anybody. And so I just started doing that, and I've gotten pretty close. I got close with the Iron Skulls. I brought Godsworn once when I hadn't had any practice with it, just because I knew the situation. Yeah, it was the only time I ever brought them. But I mean, I'm always trying to make sure that I have like one of those. And then like when I get to the tournament, I look, okay, so like, are people here that I have to actually compete with, or should I try something else? So I have two decks, and one is my, uh-oh, I better try really hard deck. And one is like, all right, so everybody's kind of like not as skilled as me, and I'll bring this.
Sure. Oh, and then by doing that, it lets you, within the constraints of the deck you have, just kind of play to the maximum of what's available to you.
Exactly. It's like playing in hard mode. Yeah.
What do you recommend we listen to drive that point home?
Well, you recommended, because I couldn't figure out a good one, and you just came up with David Bowie's Changes.
Sure.
Which is, I think, perfect for that, because you should be changing your thing. All right. Let's see. I think that in the course of a game, sometimes, and I know that I've completed this because when I'm looking across the table at my opponent and they're like, oh, or like, oh, like, ooh, that was a good play. If they say that to me, then I know that I've made a move that forces my opponent to either use a card or mess up their plans. So a lot of times I will do things not because I need them done, but because I think that my opponent wants them not to be done. If that makes sense. Sure. So sometimes if I'm looking at Grimwatch, yeah, I'll just stand on objectives for no reason. Or I'll restless prize them under me for just so that you can't. You know, if somebody needs, I remember I did this once against Randall. He was playing Thorns and I was playing Molog, and he had Inescapable Vengeance. What's the one that you put on the Briar Queen so she can just bamf onto
That's it. Yeah.
Is that it?
Onto a starting hex.
So she had that, which means that when she moves, she has to land on a starting hex, right?
If she teleports, but she can still move.
If she teleports. Right.
Okay. So in this case, I longboarded Randall because that's what I used to do with Molog. And the Briarcoon was far enough away that couldn't just do a regular charge, had to do a teleport if she wanted to get close to Molog. And I was looking at the board and I'm just like, cause Molog had taken some damage at that point. And I'm like, oh, if I stand on this starting hex, you can't get me. And I was just looking at the board and I was like, okay, so I'll just, I just moved Molog onto the starting hex that was either behind a blocked hex, or it was far enough away that the two range wasn't going to be able to do anything to me. And I just needed to survive for like to the end of the round, and I would have won. And so that's what I did. I just moved on to there and I just sat there and just watched him squirm. He couldn't do anything.
Yeah, sure.
So look for opportunities to do stuff like that.
Yeah. That requires a level of play that makes it so you have a sense of what those plans might be. But also, one of your points in this was making them use cards, making them use resources to make that happen. So either
suboptimal situations, right?
Right. And the converse of that is if you have a plan, try to have a little redundancy. So for instance, in my last game, I was trying to score Reclaim the Lamentary, but I was getting greedy and I decided like I could afford to use a sidestep to get me there. But what it meant was that when I got distracted at the end of the round, I no longer had sidestep in my hand to counter it. And so I ended up with nothing to show for it. Whereas if I had gone the more conservative route, try and get Reclaim without having to use sidestep to get there, and then I've got some insurance in case they have some counterplay.
Very cool. I found one too. You do? What do you got?
I got Our Plans by the Cloud Nothings from Attack on Memory.
I loved Cloud Nothings. Those guys are amazing.
Yeah.
So good. I have Chuck Berry's You Can't Catch Me.
Ooh, all right. Fair. All right.
All right. I got two more.
Keep them coming.
Keep them coming.
All right.
As far as, and this has been done to death, but it's always important to point out, is you want to keep the card count in your power deck low. Mm-hmm. A thing that a lot of newer players do, especially, is that they throw like 30 cards in their deck.
And well, I remember there was this wild, do you remember listening to Claim the City? They said someone in their area was playing with like 30, like a Reavers deck with 30, with the idea of reflexes. Wow, that is crazy to think about.
That means that the last five objectives, sorry, the last five gambits and the last five upgrades are not as good. So you get this like dilution effect. And so I was saying the only reason why you should ever go above 20 is if you need the cards to get a certain thing done. And even still, it's not like a great idea. I find myself playing with 22 cards a lot only because I'm always like, this card's great. And I can't not have it. I mean, there's a lot of cards out there that are available that are actually pretty good. But, and Jay Clare always plays with 24 and he wins like that. So so I wouldn't go up to 30. That's our big problem. And I know other people will say, yeah, but the math. And it's like, yeah, okay, the math. You're right. The math. But on the other hand, like sometimes you need to have that extra card and that's okay, but don't go crazy.
I think so. We did a whole episode on this, and I think our final conclusion, because who did we had on? Steven Van for the real dig into the math. I think our conclusion at the end was that you can go over 20, but you have know exactly why you're going over 20. Like if you don't have a real good reason why, then you probably shouldn't be doing it.
So exactly.
What recommended listening brings us home here.
Dave Matthews Band, Too Much.
All right. So that's we got ourselves a whole bunch of keys. We're starting to run a little short on time, so Phil's gonna bring us home. And I think Phil, if you feel up for it, I think we'll go with some of the etiquette ones in particular. I think those are Max covers a bunch on gameplay here. You got some good etiquette ones to bring us home with?
Yeah, definitely. So one of the sort of first things that I think is always important to remember when you're playing a game specifically that's in person and you're, you know, maybe playing against somebody you don't know very well, like in a tournament situation, or maybe that's the first time you've ever met them. Just always remember that this is a game. People are doing this generally to have fun. I mean, some people are really in it to win it, but generally this is supposed to be a good time. So be friendly. Be kind, like talk to these people, like get to know them, because you know, even if you win, if your opponent comes away thinking, man, that guy's a real jerk, you didn't do yourself a service there. Really you should be working towards building a community, having a good, you know, rapport with your opponents and being able to feel like people are going to want to come back to the table.
People are at the table right now because they either like the game or they want to like the game, but they're gonna return if the experience is enjoyable and the experience is more than what's on the table, right?
I would also definitely worry about, you know, people where it's their first tournament or their first tournament in your local meta, and if you want them to come there and be like, oh, that's a good place to go, so that they show up, because it's more fun to play against a larger field.
Yeah, definitely. There's nothing worse than trying to play a game when there's just nobody to play against.
If I had to play Phil one more time.
Maybe you'll never see these people again, but with the way the online community is, you never know. You might get people who are willing to travel a significant distance to play against people face to face. So always remember that you're sort of representing yourself and your community, and if you want to keep that going, you need to rep it. So that's sort of first point. I think that one's pretty much most important. Sort of to go along with that, if it's not like super neck and neck in a tournament kind of situation, I think it's always nice to debrief a game, because either you can help somebody else that maybe you saw some moves where you were like, oh, if you had done this thing or that thing, you could have had me. And so that way they know going forward how to become better from their loss. And I think people usually appreciate that. I mean, if some people are obviously not like you, sometimes you can read the situation and know that they're not going to want to talk about it. But generally, I feel like people are usually receptive to talking through a game. And it's a good way to just sort of get a conversation going afterwards. And then conversely, if you felt like you really got stomped and you were really confused, you know, ask for some feedback. The worst they can say is no, but I feel like usually if you're like, man, that really didn't go well for me, do you see anything from your perspective, that people are usually pretty willing to say like, oh yeah, I thought maybe you shouldn't have done this, that, or the other thing. And you can always get something out of those games, even when things go sideways for you.
Okay. Go ahead. I'd say ask for that feedback and then be receptive to it as well. Like sometimes in the heat of a bad loss, you know, it felt like it wasn't really anything I could have done differently. Somebody says something and I did that because X, but make sure you're being receptive. You've asked for this feedback. They've taken the time to give it to you. Make sure you're being receptive to consider the suggestions, because obviously something didn't go right. So be open to whatever feedback is thrown your way.
I was just going to say before, don't be, another way to like say that actually, because if you're in a tournament setting, they might not want to tell you like how they play their deck because you're still in the middle of the tournament. So maybe you can say something like, hey, when the tournament's over, can we just talk about that? How you were playing yours and like what, you know, something like that, because again, like keeping information about your deck close to your vest during tournament plays is really important, especially to more competitive players.
And I mean, and so obviously know the situation, but in most tournaments, unless it's like really huge, you're probably not going to play that person again. And unless they're worried about you, like telling their secrets to somebody else, which would honestly be pretty poor sportsmanship, in my opinion. You know, there's not a whole lot to lose by telling somebody that you just beat how they could improve or what they think is going on in their deck. So that if they see it again, in a different person's, that they can sort of counter that. But yeah, definitely. Like if it's like Adepticon, you may be facing the same person in the end. If it's like a situation where your records are tied. All right. And then final point here, sort of, this is kind of another gameplay one, but also an etiquette thing. You know, try your best to keep your emotions in check during a game. Like I know sometimes dice can be frustrating, or maybe you feel like your deck's coming out in just the absolute worst possible way, but you know, you've got to plan for that. You've got to be ready for those situations and be able to say, okay, it's not going well, but I know my game plan. I know what I need to do. I'm going to just do my best here in this situation. Because obviously if you get flustered, you're almost certainly going to make a mistake. You're going to do something that was probably suboptimal, and your opponent will then continue to capitalize on your bad luck.
Your opponent in that case is going to know that something's wrong and that they have you. This reminds me of a great man, Lieutenant Daniel Caffey. And Lieutenant Daniel Caffey was going to go, he was a lawyer. He was going to go and interrogate a particular Colonel Jessup, known to be a bit of a surly character. And before he went into the courtroom, he said to his legal team, poker faces, don't flinch in front of the jury. Something doesn't go our way. Don't hang your head. Don't shift in your seat. Don't scribble furiously. Whatever happens, you have to look like it's exactly what you knew was going to happen. And I feel as though when you're playing this game, that's kind of an attitude that I think you have to take sometimes, because you do communicate a lot of information in a face-to-face sitting in a room across from an opponent situation. A lot of what you do can be picked up. Again, like I'm always looking at that stuff. I'm always trying to see if my opponent is like, you know, shuffling their cards and going like, oh, should I throw this out? I know that they have a suboptimal card in their hand now. Or if they're looking down at something and they're like counting on the board or something like that, I can be like, oh, he's setting up a charge. Like I can actually, like if I see that I'm about to do something and they're like holding this one card in their hand, I'm like, they got some sort of counterplay for that. Like I can read a lot off of what opponents are doing, and I try to give them literally nothing. Very often I look at my cards, I close my hand, and I put it on top of the table, and I don't even look at them. And then no matter what they do, I try not to make any motion at all. Try to give them absolutely nothing, because you can pick up a lot of information just from body language.
for me, when I draw that first hand, this is not intentional misinformation. I noticed I have this, you know, tick where I would probably say 80% of the time I draw, I'll be like, I don't know, I guess I'll keep it. You know, even I'm not trying to be deceitful, but I've the number of times I've said that, I don't know.
You don't strike me as a person who tries to be deceitful.
That's the most deceitful thing about me.
I think you're just Midwestern. Has anybody ever told you guys that you sound like Anna Gasteyer and Molly Shannon from the Sweaty Balls bit on SNL?
So like, all the time.
I don't know. It's like you're on the
radio. When we're not on the podcast, we get it. You know,
like, right. I'm just saying, because I listen to you guys all the time, and every time I'm just thinking of them like eating a muffin or something like that. Recommended listening for that tip, by the way. Lady Gaga, Poker Face.
Oh, so good.
Oh, of course.
I guess the last thing I wanted to say about that piece, though, was to Phil's original statement of like, you know, keep your emotion in check on some of these, maintain calm. You know, when you let that get the better of you, you're letting that kind of stress reaction, kind of take control. And I worked some jobs where you know, they've had to study how people operate under stress, and they find you become much more closed off to new inputs, new stimulus.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. when you let that stress environment occur, then you are you're setting yourself up for tunnel vision, which is making your situation even worse. So,
yeah. And you know, maybe less to the gameplay, but it's not always fun to play against somebody who's having a bit of a meltdown. So keep that in mind as
just
well.
Just think of all the dumb stuff you've done when you've been angry. Dumb stuff you've done and dumb stuff you said when you're angry. If you get triggered by dice, which, by the way, I totally do this. The only thing that really makes me mad is terrible dice, because it should be, I should look, if I hit on swords, one out of three of those dice better be a crit or a sword. I'm just saying. So the only thing that triggers me is things that have nothing to do with my gameplay. And that makes me really mad. But anyway, besides that,
I do enjoy again, like when we're playing and the dice start to go bad on you. Like at this point, you don't even get mad; you just like kind of resign to it. You're like, oh yeah, well there
that's
that is.
Where it is. There it is. Yeah, so, you get like four crits on three dice, and I get like double supports. And I know that I said four crits on three dice. That is accurate. Yeah.
Sounds like a John Reese move.
Yeah, I've got the innate crit card.
Yeah, exactly. And then I get like two double supports, and I'm like, "Yep, that's how that goes. That's that thing right there. It's just supports." I should put on Spirit Bond.
Yeah. Somebody was talking about, man, we're gonna spin off to something else here, but at one point, I managed to get both. Bonded Spirit Bond on the same Ripa Snarlfang fighter, and then also got on Survival Instincts, which meant that fighter defensively, if somebody was attacking them from adjacent, every face of any die they rolled was going to be a success.
Nice.
Yeah, which is pretty tough. Nuts. And then you proceed to get critted to death.
So. Right. Well, that's what you would need. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, spicy combo. Anyway, anybody got anything else they want to hit for keys before we start to wrap this whole thing up?
You had a good one that you wrote down, and I just want to make sure that we say that you should go to this app called Warband Odds, because you were talking about evaluating risk and knowing probabilities.
Yeah.
You can't like whip that out during a tournament, but I do suggest you get that app and kind of like put in little situations that might happen for your particular warband that you're bringing. And figure out what the chances of critting, what the chances of winning, drawing, all that stuff is, so that you understand if you're making an optimal move or if you're not.
Sure. And what I'll occasionally do if it's like a relaxed or practice game, you know, somebody else is about to make an attack and they're hemming and hawing like, ah, do I swing at this guy where they're defending on two dice, but I have double supports, or do I swing on this one that is only one support but is trapped, or whatever the case may be. You know, I'll offer like, hey, do you want to pause? Because it's interesting to me. Like I, if I see this situation, I want to have some, and I like to think of, you know, like I'm going to you know, come up in my head with what I think the better one is and then check that. And if we don't do it right then, I'll do it after the fact. You know, we'll get done with the game. Like, okay, let's look that up. You had cleave against this guy, or you could go against this one where you had, where they had less dice or something like that. And just check to see if your instincts were correct.
Yeah. In a casual game, I'll totally do that openly. Like on the table, if somebody, you know, if I'm going up against somebody and they're like, hey, I wonder, you know, they're trying to figure out whether they should do it or not, I'll just pull out my phone, I'll put it on, and I'll go like, you have a 55% chance of winning this if you do it. And then they can make their decision, I guess.
But that was it. So play, obviously, that is a whole pile of keys. There's a whole keychain full. It's a comical movie jailer's keychain of keys to salvation.
All dark cards for these keys.
It was a great idea for an app, and I appreciate that, Max. Thanks for coming on and setting that up.
So, thanks for having me. I now have the supremacy of podcasts myself. I've been on Battle Mallet, Path to Glory, and now What the Heck. So
yeah. Do it again. You can be dug in.
So. Yeah. Well, let's see. I guess, I don't know. I guess Matt would have to get me on crit def, but we'll see.
Sure. Well, now you're talking overextended or claim the city or infestation levels. If you get up to,
I'd have to destroy one though. I'm on my own. Right. So wouldn't that be claim the city?
Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Right, there you go. That's five. I just have to get on Matt. Matt, give me a call, man.
We have an infestation of Bernstein. Ooh, all right.
So does my wife.
We want to give a quick shout out.
Post, right?
it'll show up somewhere.
No, leave it in. That was good. That was funny.
Solid gold. Hey, we did mention that we're trying to do a local event here. That's going to be 18 January of the new year. And our anticipation is that it will be at Noble Knight Games here in Madison. So if you are within easy traveling distance of Madison, we would love to have you in here for that. We'll do a kit, and we will be happy to hang out with you. And if you can hang longer, we'll buy you a drink and buy you some food or something like that. But we'd like to get some local stuff going. So 18 January, mark your calendar if you're in the upper Midwest. Phil, anything else?
I think that'll do it.
All right. So you, as always, can get in touch with us. That's at WTHcast on Twitter or whatthehexcast@gmail.com. And special thanks to all the folks who were writing in for the contest. By the time this goes out, we'll have announced a winner. Time is weird, but it was real nice to chat to people. It kind of triggered a bunch of different conversations. That was really cool. And my favorite part of that was talking to all the people around the world who are just saying, hey, we want to say thanks to them. And then if you want to check out more content, you can always look at the whole family of podcasts from our network. That's themortalrealms.com. Go check that website out. We got stuff on there. And there's a link there to the Patreon if you want to drop a tip in the tip jar. We have had so much recommended listening, but love it so much. And so does Max. So we're gonna close it out with one more bit of recommended listening. For me, I'm recommending Two Silver Keys from Calexico. I think it's off that Carried to Dust album. What else we got here?
Skills to Pay the Bills, Beastie Boys. Mm-hmm. And then how about Fix You by Coldplay?
Fair enough. All right. Thanks again, Max. For What the Hex, I've been Davey.
This is Phil.
And I've been Max. Have you ever read an essay written by a 14-year-old?
What am I thinking of? To the... Oh. Wow, is that your keyboard?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Don't play on that.
It does sound like you're tap dancing.
Maybe that's what I'm doing. And I've been Max.
Perfect. The question mark on it made it all the better.
So. I'm not entirely sure sometimes.